You're listening to Raising Anchor, a Rhode Island FC podcast. We're glad you're here. Hello, and welcome to Raising Anchor, your podcast and source for all things Rhode Island FC. I'm your host, Matt Entrican, coming to you on Thursday, May 16th. RIFC tallies its sixth draw of the season after its match last week came down to the wire. We'll talk about why it's some of the best soccer you've seen all season. We'll also get you ready as RIFC heads to Colorado Springs to take on the Switchbacks, a team who is starting to also get their legs under them, and discuss why this game is maybe just one of the most important tests of the season so far. Joining me as always is co-host Jason Carey. Jason, how is it going, my friend?
Can't complain, or can I? So I remembered my assignment to try and come up with a different way to introduce myself than just saying good, you know?
And that's that you went neutral? That was your whole big reveal?
Can't complain, you know? I mean, that's like...
People have sat on this for seven whole days, and you went fence? I'm not impressed.
I said I was even keel.
Listeners, write in. Is this the most impressive or least impressive?
I mean,
I'm underwhelmed. I can
complain.
I'm underwhelmed right now. I'm sure the fans last week getting to experience Jason in the raw, Jason in the moment, got a much better experience.
The thought didn't live rent-free in my head the whole time. So, you know, I just kind of came up with whatever happened to float to the front of my head.
Are you talking about that intro, or are you talking about last week when you went Jason in the Wild?
Yeah, so I got out and about on this last home game, and I attended the match as a fan and hung out with Defiance 1636. Got the real experience. Got those sweet $8 tickets.
It was funny, you know, I had to work the event, my first time ever emceeing, and that was nerve-wracking enough besides technical, like, equipment issues. But then you get to go, and you say, hey, Matt's working, I should be representing the podcast, but I've got a better idea. What if I just don't do that last minute and decide I'm just going to be a fan for the day? I see how it is now. I understand.
It was kind of a last-minute divergence. My wife came with me, and some plans fell through. Someone else was supposed to be there to hang out with her, one of her friends, but they couldn't make it. So I wasn't just going to abandon her, you know, and go hang out with the media by myself.
You abandoned your responsibilities to me for your responsibilities to your wife. I get it. Listen,
I went undercover to, you know, to get the true fan experience.
How was it?
It was a lot of fun. I mean, shout out to those guys. I don't know how they do it for 90 minutes or 90 minutes plus even. I had a sore throat for like 2 days afterwards. Lots and lots of tea, you know.
lots of throat coat.
You know it.
I had a blast working it. I had a lot of fun. It sounds like you had a lot of fun. In fact, so much so that you were disappointed with me when I said, hey, you can't come to the post-game interview, and you sent me a list of questions.
I was just giving you crap.
Yeah, of course.
I knew. I was having too much fun. It was not appropriate for me being there.
I almost missed the post game. They were like, are you guys coming or not? And I was just like, I'm on my way, but I got stuck because I did try to come and see you. I went down and spent a few minutes with Defiance at the north end, but then I too got wrapped up in like the exodus and I couldn't make it back across the field. My credentials let me go basically anywhere except for on the pitch. So like I tried to cut a few times and they're like, no. And I showed the badge and like, yeah, that's the sidewalk, buddy. Stay on the sidewalk where you belong.
You got to get the vest.
It's just really awkward when you're the last one in the post game and Coach Kano's waiting for you so that you can ask him questions. So that was fun. That was a lot of fun. But hey, listen, let's start talking about soccer. Let's stop talking about us. Draw Kings are still alive. The saga continues.
How dare you? You cursed us.
Prove me. Hey, listen, I didn't do anything, okay? First off, this team was drawing its matches well before I came up with Draw Kings. And now it's just something that's happening. And the team has to prove to everyone else that that's not a thing. But until it isn't, it is. So the Draw Kings era is upon us.
Fair enough, I guess.
So draw again this weekend then, right?
No. No, we got this one.
I think the game day experience, draw notwithstanding, I think it's been an increasingly better experience game over game. Last weekend, we had a dragon or a dinosaur, depending on who you ask, showed up. I love the take was like, I need to know more about this dinosaur online. And it was like, well, it has wings. And so that would make it a dragon. But then on top of that, we had a bunch of new experiences for the kids. There was a slight rotation in the food trucks. It was Mother's Day. There was a lot of excellent stuff going on around there. Did you see Chip's head bandana?
Yeah. Fantastic.
We got to be careful how we approach this. But yes, when that was a very excellent marketing idea. Chip, did you guys know that Chip loves moms? Loves them. Loves moms. But there was lots of great things. There was a bunch of new merchandise. There was like 9 new hats on sale last week. In fact, you could vote on the hats. Did you see any of them? I know you were kind of like just did the march and everything. Did you see any of the new merch?
I saw one or two. You know, I'll take one of each, just try them out, you know, let the club know which one I like.
That's true. For those of you that haven't met Jason in person, he's very much a hat guy. So he's wearing a hat right now. But yeah, so there's a bunch of new hats. You didn't have a fan favorite, though. You're just going to wait till the club gives you one of each and then you can make a decision from there.
I just kind of saw them in passing.
So there's actually a hat that I think they've saved for the best for last. There's a hat coming out for their salute to service special against Loose City on 5/25. The promotion just came out, I think, yesterday. And you can get a ticket, a drink, which we've been told is also alcoholic if you choose, and the RAFC camo hat for $40. I thought it was really funny because I'm pretty sure those hats retail at like 25 to 30. So, you know, beers, drinks at places like that are at least $6, but I think the drinks are on average like $10. So you can basically buy, if you're going to drink at the stadium and you want that hat,
buy a hat and a beer and get a free ticket.
Yeah, like bring a friend. Exactly. Like, this isn't even us marketing it. That's just like bad math on the club. Like, they should have charged at least like $10 more. It's like when you buy the combo and like something here is worthless to this organization. And which part are they giving away? And it's not the game day experience. So, but yeah, that's great. So yeah, if you're interested, or even if you're not interested in bringing a friend, just buy the ticket and you'll still, I think, come out on top with the drink and hat combo there. So you guys can find that online. That hat, I was worried that it was like one of those like freebie hats, like, you know, an RFC camo hat sponsored by Red's Chicken or something. And it had more like company logos on it than the actual, you've seen those before, right?
Yeah.
It's a legit hat. Like, it's not, it's like they're giving away real value items for the game. So you can't hate on that at all.
Yeah, it's awesome that they're doing that. The Mother's Day experience one last week was good too. I think they're just...
You're just not a soccer mom?
You know.
You dabble.
Just sometimes. When I have to assemble my kids together and, you know, put them in my van. Too bad my kids are dogs and they don't have any soccer, you know, dog soccer. Is that a thing?
Maybe that's the, I mean, if they have car soccer, right? Dog soccer is just the next thing on it. Fun fact about that game before we move on, there'll be another freebie on the night there. There will be foam fingers. So I'm assuming like the we're number one. I maybe it's an anchor.
Foam
I don't
anchors?
Know. I hope so. I didn't get the details. They just said it was a foam product. The first 1,000 fans that walk through the gates will get them. Because last week's the high bar, the rally towel, that was actually really cool. Did you get one by any chance?
I think so.
Oh man, you had way too much fun in Defiance if you don't even remember that.
I'm pretty sure I got it. It's either in my jacket or on the ride home, I just left it in your car or something. So
no, it was a really high quality print. Like sometimes again, you just like spray paint a logo and pass them on. It was really, really well done.
What if it's like a foam tide so you can go up the tide?
No, the club's already embraced anchors up. Much to the chagrin of everyone on Discord who want it to be up the tide and think that we need to adopt that. It's anchors up. I mean, we haven't even talked about...
I've seen a little bit of both, but...
But have we even talked about the Rhode Island FC Pale Ale from the Guild? I haven't thrown that up on as a video yet. For all of you that have enjoyed that beer, next time you grab one of those cans, just give it a little twist and read all of the different text on there. And you tell me whose slogan made it where. Because I'm pretty sure the Guild owes us a slight royalty now for that beautiful language just smacked right there on the can.
Or they can just pay us in free beers.
Yeah,
too.
What do you think we would make more money drinking at the Guild or in general with Guild beers or getting a royalty?
The amount of work and effort to get like lawyer it up and, you know, get those royalties, just give us some
lawyer
beers.
Up. This is a gentleman's conversation. Don't get lawyers involved, man. We're going to get like a cease and desist tomorrow. But anyways, go look at that can. It's an amazing thing. Proud to see it on there. Let's continue on to another trip we need to talk about, another game day experience, and that is one Hartford Athletic road trip. There's been a lot of confusion. There's been a lot of excitement. There's been a lot of chaos around this planned event. So just want to set the record straight. Right now, the club is giving, for a discounted rate of $60, you get a ticket to the match, round trip transportation on a RIFC fan bus. So like one of those big, you know, rock star vans, not like a children's elementary school bus. There's food and drink provided, as well as special access to an official Rhode Island FC pre-match tailgate, where I've been told alcohol will be supplied by the club. Listen, they're going all out for this. The buses are going to take off from the Providence Park and Ride on Saturday, June 1st at 3 p.m. You need to be there to check in at 2 p.m. at the absolute latest. This is not something to show up like it's 2:58 and you're going to get on this bus. We'll find out the exact details on where that address for that park and ride is, but you need to get your spot. So they first made it available to Defiant 1636 members, then they opened it up to season ticket members, and now they're letting anyone else kind of fill the seats that are available still. There's not many left. We did a head count and it's down to less than, I think, 15%. This is a great opportunity. So if you're interested and you're not a season ticket member or you're not a supporters group member and you do want to go with the club and experience this very unique opportunity, you need to email tickets at rhodeislandfc.com or call 401-955-RIFC as soon as possible to get yours. There's been a little bit of confusion because the tickets to Hartford away opened up before the club announced the bus program. So there's been a lot of people and a lot of conversation on the Discord talking about like, hey, I already bought tickets to the game. I don't want to buy more tickets just to get the bus ride. If you're in that kind of position where you weren't sure and you've been waiting, the club will do what it needs to make sure that you're only paying for the services you need. So if you're looking for tickets to the bus, but you already have your own, have a conversation, reach out to the club at those same things, tickets at rhodeislandfc.com or the phone number, and make sure that you get the account settled so that you can participate. You do not need to overspend because you jumped the gun and bought tickets on your own ahead of Rhode Island offering this deal. So they'll make it right. They'll take care of you. This is going to be a fantastic experience. I am so excited. There's a question a little later that we'll answer at the end of the podcast, but I am just getting more and more pumped for this derby.
I have a good feeling it's going to feel like an invasion to them. I think we're going to bring a lot of people. And I've seen some of their matches lately. They're not being attended very well.
No. I mean, well, they're kind of resuming their form from last year, not to throw too much shade at them, but yeah, they seem like maybe it was early success and now they're kind of, you know, reducing themselves back to the mean.
Have you ever traveled to an away game like this?
So I've never traveled with a supporters group. I've heard that they can be legendary. It's drinking on the buses. It's singing. It's partying. It's talking about, you know, all the great memories you've had prior to that. So I've never done it. Have you? I know you've gone with like family to a couple of away games, but have you ever done something like that?
No, not with supporters groups like this. I've been to some away games in the MLS, but nothing like this.
Yeah, this is going to be something for the record books. Super excited. Can't wait to meet everyone that will come out to this. Looking forward to it, whether you're a diehard or you just want to see that team in Connecticut fall on their face. Either way, and there are some big surprises in store for the club, for the supporters group, for the game itself. So this is definitely not something you want to miss. We'll actually have some members of Defiant 1636 on a special episode right before the game in Hartford. So look for a double episode week that week. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have some of those guys back on. So I think that's all of it for the news. Let's get into this game recap. What a game Rhode Island FC had against Sacramento Republic. The formation itself, more of the same, but slight differences. We saw the 3-5-2. I'm going to almost stop saying the formation because I don't think it's going to change, or will it? We'll find out. But yeah, so having said that, we had Vegas and goal, Nodarce, Yao, and Alves making up that back three. And then the introduction of two players, one new and one who's kind of been knocking on the door of making a starting appearance. You had Turnbull, Holstead, Panayotu, Ibarra, and Sadie, with Panayotu being that player that we weren't sure if he would make the start. He only had a few days of practice and training with the club after that signing to make that impact. And coach must have seen something very special. I think we saw it on the field that night as well. So he earns a start right away. And then you see Dequa and Fusan bringing up that striker pair at the top. This was a fantastic formation. I can't wait to talk more about it. On the Sacramento Republic side, though, I think it is important to note that there were some notable misses on the night in terms of players that were not on the roster. One, Vitola was not in goal this night. Mazzola was their backup goalkeeper, so they were missing out on their starting keeper. And that's a huge change, losing the goalkeeper of the year for 2023 in terms of USL performance. And then Rodrigo was out for his son, Roro, who was undergoing or was about to undergo heart surgery. That is a terrible thing that, you know, you have to deal with, let alone at someone that's that young. So we hope nothing but the best. I think the surgery may actually be happening right now. I looked online. I didn't see any updates yet. I don't know that we would even hear them. That's very personal. That's family health business. But just, you know, our thoughts go out to Rodrigo and his family right now, having to deal with something of that nature. So we wish them the best.
Yeah, definitely. You hate to see children born with crazy diseases like that. Doesn't give them a chance, you know?
It's not something that, like, I don't even know how to put that into words, so I don't think I'm going to put it into words. I'm just going to talk about soccer because that's the lane I swim in. I'm just glad I never have to deal with that. So, hey, let's get into this. We've got the formation. We've got the players' general thoughts and opinions.
Definitely really exciting game. You know, we saw what Paniotto brought to the team, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but, I mean, don't want to say he's the missing piece, but
he's the missing piece.
But he brought a dimension to the team that we maybe just kind of haven't seen yet, or knew that by adding that final piece that would unlock, you know, some of the types of attacks that we were looking to expand upon.
I do think it's funny that the way the table is so tightly packed in this 6 through 10 period of the standings, one win for Rhode Island FC right now puts them all the way to fifth place. Like, that's what six draws get you, is one less draw and one additional win completely flips where the positioning of this team is on the standings on the table. Jack P is the real deal, but so is JJ Williams. JJ got his first minutes of the season. We'll also talk about that in a minute. But it's just so exciting to see that this new dynamic that both of these players bring. We saw an error in the sense of the lack of play through the midfield be corrected immediately with Jack P's positioning. And then when we saw JJ sub on, it was kind of like watching a different version of Chico, someone who it's like I can already see how they're going to play together really well if you leave two of them just kind of hungry and looking around the edges or inside the box. Like, I can kind of start to see those pieces falling into place. But with those positives, you know, it was really interesting in the post game. The coach, after kind of breaking down what he saw on the match, he even acknowledged that one of the toughest decisions he has coming up is deciding the match day talent that he's going to put on the pitch, because there is so much talent now. A day ago, a week ago, there was, you know, we were struggling to find out who was quality enough. And now it seems like that coin has flipped. And with everyone healthy, this is going to be a really difficult team for the coach to manage when it comes to actually getting minutes to the players, because there's a lot of players deserving of time that may actually have to be kind of relegated to a substitution model. But listen, I still think this was RIFC's best game of the season so far. Do you agree?
Oh, definitely. Best since the first game. That one we played really well too. There's been some parts in between where we've seen some good play, but not the consistency that we saw throughout this match.
Yeah. And I mean, I think with all that consistency, there was some consistency in a negative as well. The finishing still just isn't quite there. Obviously, we're going to talk about Sadie's sitter and how he missed that. But there were a few looks on goal that Chico had, as well as Fuson and Holstead hitting the post of the framework that didn't go in. And there was also one late chance that JJ tried to convert. They're taking the shots, which is important. You want to see that happen. But I think we just need to see a few more of those go in. I don't know that you can have an XG of 2.13 on 20 shots with six on target and only convert that to two goals and a tie game at the end. I just feel like it needs to be a little bit better. But for all intent and purpose, this team has moved the needle so successfully that I'm not worried yet. And if we see more of this, you know, the wins are going to fall into this team's lap.
I mean, we also saw a Sacktown team that scored two goals off of half as many shots that we created. So maybe just a bit of unluckiness on the night.
specifically at Burns Stadium of all places too. Yeah. So let's talk about this first half. We're going to get into Jack P in a minute, but I want to make sure that we kind of cover everything that leads up to Jack P's real big influences on the game.
So yeah, in the first 10 minutes or so, we saw Sacramento have a few good looks. RAFC got a few attacks in, but Sacramento was kind of controlling the ball. Outside of that 10 minutes, though, we saw RAFC grow into the game, and they started asking questions of Sacramento's defense. Ultimately, in the 31st minute, when we get our first goal, we see Clay pinging a ball up to Turnbull, who controls it and just blasts one right past Mazzola. What a goal. I really am really liking Turnbull a lot. One of my top players.
It's so interesting to me to see how he collected that ball on the run, contained it within like two dribbles, if you can even call it that, because the ball was still, it wasn't at his feet yet. It was still bouncing in front of him as he was trying to move it forward. And then just the confidence to rip a shot like that. We don't see that in a lot of the players on this pitch so far. We've seen them kind of need to set up that perfect positioning and not kind of take the ball in whatever direction or whatever angle it's kind of coming in. I don't know that there's a lot of players in the league that could bury a shot like Stephen Turnbull did on that goal. When we signed him, I thought that he would be someone that was very solid defensively. I'm starting to see him grow into the incredible contribution he's making in the offensive persuasion and also in the final third. Do you think that a lot of the future of Rhode Island FC scoring is going to come through Turnbull, or is that just Turnbull taking advantage of the chances he gets and he's just been on a masterclass with it?
I think he's going to be an important part of our attack. In certain games where maybe defensively we don't need him as much, I think you will see him be unleashed as like a, we already kind of see that anyway. He's another attacker. He's a winger on top of our forwards as well, and just kind of get up there and create combination play with our forwards.
I love to see him on the pitch, and I love when he gets subbed off. He gets just frustrated and almost borderline upset that he's getting asked to leave the pitch. I like players that, they feel like they haven't put on a complete session for the day. In fact, when we interviewed him afterwards, and he echoed what a lot of the players did say, this felt like a loss for them. Even though we're complimenting the quality of the play and the tie itself, for the players to basically take this game all the way to 90 minutes plus and then have to equalize in a tie, to them, they feel like this is a loss. And they should, right? Because they want to win every single game. They're not playing for the draw. But having said that, I just continue to be impressed with what Turnbull does on the pitch. It's the fourth time that Rhode Island FC has scored, but we know what Rhode Island FC does when they go up first.
For the first time this season, Sacramento is trailing a game. So Sacramento realizes, they kind of wake up, they get some possession, and within the next 10 minutes or so, equalize with a header from Amon.
Yeah, actually, fun fact, it wasn't the first time this season that Sacramento was trailing. They haven't trailed since October of 2023, so into the playoffs. Obviously, they got knocked out, but they hadn't been trailing in, 6 months? I know there's an off season, let's be honest, but that's a long time for a team to not ever have to chase a game.
That's pretty nuts.
I thought that was pretty nuts, yeah. The 7 minutes to equalize, coach said this himself in his own words, there's a confidence that needs to come from this team and an ability to get their head back into the game when they score, and that they didn't do the job on the night and get to go home. They have to continue the job. And that's something that he sees will come with time, with gelling and more experience as these men, some of them the professionals that they are, but others, he kind of hinted, maybe not quite in that space yet themselves. Is this a problem in your eyes? We've seen this now. Like I said, we've gone up four times where we've scored first, but we've not yet had a clean sheet on a win we've only had one win, right? So we haven't had a clean sheet where we've been able to win a game with not being scored on. When we do have that happen, they typically see that first goal be allowed back in within the next 10 to 15 minutes. Is that a problem for this squad in your eyes?
I think it's too small of a sample size at this point to say they lack the mentality. I think we need a few more games, especially considering we've saw such a almost a different team in a way this last game. We knew this is what this team could be, but we haven't seen this like offensive capability from them. So I think we need to give it a few more games to see if they can, now that everyone's healthy, now we've got Jack P to kind of unlock that midfield attack. You know, give it a few games and let's see where this team goes from there.
Was that Yao's fault on that first goal? Because I have been very critical of Yao, and I will be the first to admit it. But at the same time, I watched it on replay, and Yao seems to be caught between two decisions. Like, I can physically watch his mind and his body make two decisions at the same time, which pan out to, like, neutralizing each other. One is Amon comes through in the front, and Odarce is trying to block the channel for the cross. And he's just trying to position to make sure that there's no goal-scoring threat coming aerially. He misses the alignment, but Yao is coming in from behind Amon, and he's right there. He can easily come in over the top or do something to just throw Amon off. But he sees another player, I think it might have been Cicerone, tracking in through the middle. But Ibarra was chasing him, but he just decides, like, which one am I supposed to cover? Which one am I supposed to do? And so then he doesn't do either of them. And Amon just goes through in the aerial and just is completely unguarded to tap it in. It does happen fast, but again, Yao just seemed late to the ball. Is this just something that we need to come to expect from him the same way he's a brutalizer when it comes to his emergency tackling? Like, I'm fine if this is what I know I need to sign up for. I just don't know that I've seen enough consistency. Is this Yao's game, and is this just something that we need to anticipate?
I think it's just a little harsh to put all the blame on him. They were crashing the box. He was kind of caught between two defenders. And the reality is Sacramento is a good team. Jack Gurr delivered a great cross. Trevor Mon is hot. He's been scoring goals. You know, sometimes the goals aren't anyone's fault in particular. If it continues to be a problem throughout the season, maybe that's something that coach will have to look at. But overall, I am very happy with Yao. I think he is, you know, like a Mack truck. He just runs through, and he's done a lot of good for us. And I think, and we see minutes later, I mean, he puts in a banger right into the top of the net from a Jack Paniotu cross and gets us back up 2-1. So I think, you know, for those of people who were maybe a little hard on him, he kind of silenced them to a certain extent.
Oh, you mean Karifa Yeo?
Yeah, I know. We went back and rewatched the game. I don't know. I mean, I think these guys have pronunciation sheets, right? But some of the names, they're really botching out there.
There's only three letters in Karifa's last name. You would think that, like, I would be more forgiving of Paniotu than Yao. Like, and I guess that's Mr. Man of the Match Yeo to you as well, Mr. Broadcaster, because he got Defiance's or for that one. So listen, I don't disagree, and you love to see him go up with a goal. You'd love to see him get the man of the match. You could see it in his face when they were celebrating. Like, that goal is very special for him. But it all comes, it only manifests because of the efforts of one Jack Paniotu, and we need to now dive into this. We need to unpack the Jack P effect, because what I saw on that game was the first kind of confidence that I thought, okay, we really still can go for that fourth place table standing at the end of the season to get that home berth playoff advantage. Because this was it. This was the game changer. He's already showing that he can be a game changer. He completely changed the shape of this team and the way they transitioned the ball into the final third. It allowed us to unlock our strikers to play in and around the box versus we've seen so many times, you know, time and time and again, where Chico and Fusan have had to drop back so deep to collect the ball because they couldn't make those transitions unless it was coming outside the wings. We have, you know, in front of us, we have two heat maps right now. And while they both look similar, you can see there's a spot in the middle that's just burning bright because that's where Jack anchored in. Or if it wasn't Jack, there was another player that was comfortable there who could anchor in and distribute. There is so much more foot traffic in the opponent's penalty area. It's completely cold on the other ones. You know, like the averaging here is just incredible. He's also already taking our corner kicks, which led to his first assist. This guy is phenomenal. I am so thrilled with the signing or the loan of this player.
It's amazing to think, too, how he only trained with the team for, what, 2-3 days before this first game?
He looked like he had been doing it his entire time. Like the first touch he had where I think he megged someone in a pass, spin around, then he makes someone, and then just moved the ball at the field. Like that is the kind of stuff that will be the unlock for us to produce goal-scoring opportunities in places that we haven't yet found or combined with because of the, you know, strategy one has been wings, cross. Like, already we're seeing So, and this was, again, this is against Sacramento Republic. This is not against North Carolina. If this team had played against North Carolina the week before with Jack P and JJ Williams, I'm pretty sure the score would have been 7-1. And we would have let one because, I don't know, we would have had a take a break.
You're getting too careless after you score 7.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm confident it would have been a 7-1 game.
But yeah, like right off the bat, we saw the difference that he could make. He collects the ball, he turns, and he looks forward, and he doesn't hold on to the ball for too long. He's constantly looking to spray passes in forward momentum. Very rarely do we see him, you know, just turning around and passing it back. I honestly don't even remember if he did that.
He had, so I looked at his distribution percentages. He had the highest passing accuracy on the night. He did have like 3 back passes, but out of the 32 that he strung together, everything else was side or forward facing. So yeah, exactly. He collected the ball and he moved it with purpose. And that has been something that we have been missing when we've seen, you know, Brito, when we've seen Ibarra, or Holstead, even all good players in their own right, try to do something. It's just been lacking. I want to be fair to it just not all being on Jack P's skill. I'm sure it's legit. We saw it. It felt legit. But the other question I had is we need to talk about the Koke Vegas factor. His average positioning on the night was actually outside of his own box. Like in the data we have, we start with like the formation, but then it actually heat maps the player's most spent time on the pitch. Koke's was so far up, he was actually out of his own box, which is very unusual for every other keeper in the league, but not for Koke. I looked back on his last games that he played. He never was that comfortable. He had never ranged that far out. We've talked about this at length, that the advantage of the way Koke plays is it unlocks one of the defenders to play a little bit more up when we're in control of the ball, but it does create this high-risk reward that we can get caught really badly in transition. Sacramento Republic did not have an answer, at least in the first half. They didn't have an answer for that piece, and so Koke was able to almost basically put another player deeper into the offensive third for Rhode Island FC. So I want to ask, was this unlock Jack P? Was it Koke finally getting to play the style that we've seen was missing in the first attempts that he tried? Or was this a combination of both?
I'd say a little bit of both. And on top of that, you even just add in that the team has started to get more comfortable with playing this kind of hybrid 3-5-2. We see him, like you said, push outside of his box, and he's able to ping passes to create attacks. Did you know that he had the highest amount of final third entry passes for RAFC on the night?
I did not.
So he was creating attacks from the back.
I believe it. I mean, the way he commanded the night, and also honestly too, despite the scoreline, he was not challenged, right? They only had like 4 shots on target for the entirety of the night. And one was kicked right at him, and then one was a like questionable, like did it, would it needed to save? We don't know. So that tracks. If a keeper isn't really put into a defensive struggle and he can get more and more kind of dangerous in how far out he can go, Sacramento Republic didn't have an answer for it, and they paid the price, especially in the first half. They may have gotten that goal, but for the first, I would say, 89 minutes of this game, this was Rhode Island FC putting on a show. And we saw it. We had not seen this team play like that. They were fantastic in every way you could have asked for. I guess against one of the most difficult opponents, which we've talked about, maybe this is a club that plays to the level of the team it's up against on the pitch. We don't know if we have enough games yet to make that statement, but it certainly kind of starts to feel like that might be the case. That's going to be great for the Hartford game, because the you know, ferocity that will come after an environment like that. But you know, if we're playing against last place teams and putting in a last place performance, but then we're playing against the first place team and looking like if that was a cup, if that was a, like, that's a complete game, right? You know, this is just regular season right now. So I wasn't at all, I had no negative thoughts going into the first half. I thought that was a fantastic situation to be in. We talked about last week being up early, controlling the game, making Sacramento Republic chase, and then we didn't really fall apart in the second half, in my opinion.
We've talked about little things like the miss from Sadie, or maybe should have Yao done better on the defending, and so on and so forth, but the reality is that this was almost a complete performance from the team. We just didn't get the result in the end of the night. last week, you know, you were almost right when you said that the game would be decided in the first half, you know, if it weren't for the 92nd minute. And that's not to say that nothing happened in the second half. We did see attacks from both sides. You know, that Sadie chance that we previously mentioned happened 2 minutes into the second half. Like, the game could have been over by that time. But it is what it is at this point. You know, I imagine that's going to weigh heavy on Sadie's mind, and they're going to probably do some extra finishing practice.
All week, it's just shooting on the goal, probably. I got to meet some of Sadie's family who were in attendance to support. They were really great. They actually all had custom Sadie clothes on to support him and the squad. I only even realized they were family because, like, he walked by, I'm like, where did you get that shirt? And he's like, no, I made it. Like, that's my cousin out there. Like, oh, okay, cool. When the shot happened, I was right near them. They were loud. They're in a bunch of the pictures in social media. And when Sadie missed the sitter, you could hear them just so upset. Like, they were upset with Sadie. They were upset with themselves because they had, like, made a bunch of, you know, like, this, that's our boy, that's our guy. You know, they still supported him, but, like, you could tell they were a little deflated after that. I got to ask you, and this may date me a little bit here, or this may age me, I should say, but is Prince Sadie the new Chris Wondolowski of Rhode Island FC? When you miss an opportunity like that, do you become Chris Wondolowski, or does that only count as a World Cup reference?
How many people do you think even know what we're talking about?
Look it up for all you people born before 2001.
I remember that moment, you know, like it was yesterday.
I will never
I'll never forget
that. Yeah.
In all seriousness, though, I think Sadie ended up having a good game on the night. I had mentioned previously that I'd like to see some more of him, and so far, I still think that's the case. I think we also saw a bit hungrier of a Quisera when he was ultimately subbed in, because they kind of seem to be fighting for a similar role, I think.
Which I didn't see coming in the early days of me doing pick the formation predictions. I always saw Quisera as midfielder first into potentially a, you know, defensive-minded wingback.
I thought him and Alves were going to have to challenge for the spot, but Alves kind of seems to have his position somewhat locked down at this moment.
Right, so now this competition between Quisera and Sadie, I didn't really see that coming. Also, I don't know why, but I have in my mind that Sadie should be on the right-hand side, and he's now been experimented and played on that left side on several instances. So I know his shooting boot is left, but, like, he's been played on the right for a majority of his experience in the USL. So, you know, obviously coach is much smarter than I am at those things, but I thought he'd be a right winger for the squad. But, you know, hey, listen, you're right. It's one of those things where it is what it is. Sadie obviously should have made that. But, like, if we also look at it too, there were a couple of other chances, right? So Chico had the one-on-one where he'd slipped past the final back line, couldn't get it over the keeper. Holstead and Fusan both rang off of the woodwork. JJ had that turn where I thought JJ was going to score in the 80th minute when he got on. But it just didn't work out. This club does have a finishing problem, I think, but I wouldn't just blame it on the sitter that Sadie missed. Sadie's going to punish himself more than anything you and I or any fan could say to try to get under his skin. He's living in his own head right now, for sure. And I think what's most important now is that coach makes sure he doesn't let him slip into that kind of mindset or funk that would give a player pause for concern. So I think he'll bounce back from this and be stronger than ever.
Sacramento grew into the game and saw the lion's share of the possession, 60% to 40% RFC. But a lot of that possession was kind of in the middle in their own half. RFC limited them to chances. They only had two shots in the second half. From the eye test, it kind of seemed like RFC were limited, but they actually created some pretty good chances, created 1.08 XG compared to 1.05 in the first half. So from their six shots, they created better chances. They just ultimately couldn't finish anything, with 14 shots coming from the first half from 1.5 XG. So it was more of, you know, a battle of attrition, just keep shooting in the first half, where in the second half, it was not as many opportunities, but when they did get a chance, that they were creating big chances, they just couldn't finish.
RFC, I thought, was actually really good in the second half too, especially defensively. They limited Sacramento to only one shot on target the entire second half, up until the the 90th minute where, and there was one other shot that was on target. So, you know, of the five shots that the Republic had in the second half, two of them came before the 90th, and then there was the chaos of everything that happened kind of there at the end, which we'll talk about here. So, like, I don't, there's been a lot of conversation like, oh, they can't contain the games, they can't close them out. I don't know that that was the case on this, and I know that, you know, Phoenix Rising, they let a goal in the 90th as well, but I'm not sure that this is the same thing that we saw against Phoenix. I think this is a different problem. So let's talk about it, right? Because Alves was kind of in the moment for a couple of things that, you know, didn't go his, well, one went his way, and maybe that's why the other one didn't go his way. That's my theory anyway.
Maybe karma. Yeah. So we saw a fairly lengthy stoppage in the second half. Alves went to challenge the ball on Cicerone and kind of went through the back of him. It's one of those challenges where it very easily could have been a red. I think he got away with it getting a yellow, but it's not so clear-cut red that I think it's egregious, but I think it was definitely a rough tackle, and unfortunately it saw Cicerone have to limp off the field after that.
Yeah, and Seth the ref would disagree with you. He said that while the red would be borderline, so maybe he agreed a little bit, you can't go through a player like that, especially when you're not going to get to the ball. Seth was like, as much as I would hate to do it, I would have pulled out the red on Alves for that kind of tackle, especially when he gets him, you know, or maybe that the saving grace was that Alves got him in the shin and not with his cleat. You know, if you had raked Cicerone, you're definitely gone for something like that. I don't disagree with Seth. I think in the moment, it's really hard without the assistance of VAR to get those kinds of calls to go one way or another, unless you know 100%. So I think that Alves getting the yellow probably makes up for what happened next at the, you know, in the 90th plus.
Yeah. So towards the end of the game, we see Alves trying to like shield a ball as it rolls out. The Sacramento attacker comes to challenge it and kind of goes through him and knocks him down. So then the ball goes off Alves and there's no call. It goes Sacramento's way. And right after, we see Anking do a very similar challenge and they call a foul. I mean, you could argue that maybe it's the difference of strength, but to me, they looked basically like the same challenge.
It was the same challenge. Let's not even pretend. It was the same challenge. The only reason I can think that the ref, because it happened right in front of the AR too, right? Like the AR wasn't on the opposite side. He was right in front of it watching this happen. The only reason I can think that this doesn't go our way is because, one, we're defending and wasting time, and the ball was very slow to do its final rollout. And so maybe the ref was like, you should have played it out or kicked it out and cleared it. And so because you didn't, I'm not going to give you what you're looking for. But then at the same time, like you can't start, like that's where a ref starts to become the main character of a game, right? They start to say like, hey, I'm going to make the decisions and not call it to the spirit of what's going on. That's a foul. You can't shove someone from behind who, by the way, isn't even like, it's not a light foul. Alves has his legs planted, his knees bent to be braced for the foul, and they go right through him. It's a foul any time of the week.
I think what we're seeing here is the biases that a lot of refs and even sometimes we as fans have, where Gabriel Alves as the defender is supposed to be strong, and the attacker, when they get fouled, it's like, oh, the defender was rough or strong on the challenge. So they tend to, you know, it also depends on the ref too, but they will give calls to the way of the attacker, and then the defender needs to kind of stand his ground to a certain extent.
Anking is in the corner, does the exact same foul, chaos ensues. They get the free kick. Every player except for the keeper is basically in the box. It's a well-placed kick. The kick goes on a deflection, lands back to the feet of a Sacramento player in the box, and he just taps it in. You know, there's not much you can do here. You can't blame Vegas. He's already trying to react as fast as possible. Ricketts has just subbed on in this game to score the goal, so maybe they didn't really know. Maybe it was a man-marking issue. Maybe it was like, hey, where is this player going to be? But again, you had like five players just crowding inside that area. You put a ball to the feet in that area, there's a good chance that it may go in, right? So you hate to see it happen. I don't think this was mismanagement. I don't think this was a mistake. I think it's a bad call, or it's a repayment for another bad call that doesn't go our way, and you see another draw come in on the game.
Yeah, there was just some chaos in the box there, and it just kind of went their way and not ours. After this, we see RFC weather a few more corners, but ultimately the final whistle blows, and we see the team share the spoils of the night.
Yeah, listen, I want to talk to you. We kind of skipped past it, but I want to talk to you about the impact that JJ Williams has subbing into this game. He looked really good. He looked like a player ready to score a ton of goals this season. He was all over the pitch. He had a physicality. He had a finesse. I didn't really get to see him demonstrate his aerial game, which is supposed to be some of the best attributes that he has as a player. So in the, you know, 8 or 10 minutes that we did get to see him, I thought he was phenomenal on the night. Any key takeaways that you saw on him, or anything that you're curious on how he'll combine in the future with the squad?
I think we see really good promise from him. Just looking forward to this next match where we're going to get to see a little bit bigger of a sample size of playtime from him.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see how many minutes he gets against the Switchbacks. I think the only two things I want to call out, though, as flags for another day. One is Rhode Island FC has now conceded 4 goals to opposition substitutes in the USL. No team has conceded more than that. And the only reason I know that stat is because I've been watching how coach reacts with his player management when it comes to opposition substitutions. I noticed it a couple games ago, and I've just kind of been watching it silently. 4 of the 5 Sacramento substitutions on the night came before coach brought in any of his own changes. I know that this was the first game where a lot of kind of experience and expectations were resting on Jack P and how this would work. And I also understand that we were up for the first time for a majority of the game. So, like, again, if it's working, like, let it work. But I'm not sure if this is a stat we need to be worried about yet, because is this something that's indicative that Kano is reactionary, or is something that coach needs to kind of adjust on how he wants to close out games? We talk about the management of the players and the attitude and the actions that they have on the pitch, but I'm also kind of now starting to watch, is it how Kano approaches his player management? Is that impacting these games as well? I don't have enough sample size myself to make that determination yet, but it's definitely something I'm going to be watching for in the future.
Yeah, I think it's something we'll just have to keep an eye on. I think player management is a skill that probably takes a lot of time to develop. Any coach can come up with a great plan. It's just how do you react when that plan maybe isn't going the way that you want, especially as your opponent starts to make changes to react to you. How do you react back to them? At the end of the day, I think, you know, RFC probably should have walked away with their 3 points. I'm very happy, though, with the improvement. This was an exciting, fun match, despite the draw, Kings. You know, we nearly beat the best team in the West currently. And I think we kind of are starting to understand what this whole 3-5-2 is. It's more of the idea of this is the way that we want to attack. And then we see kind of a hybrid transition, where we've seen Turnbull dropping back a lot now to create a 4-back line. At the end of the day, formations and lineups don't mean anything. It's just kind of how your team lines up on the pitch. What's important is the tactics and the instructions that are implemented within that system that really matter. And I think, you know, from that, we're starting to see an exciting attacking team.
I think once everyone's at their healthiest, like, it's going to be really fun to watch this team start to produce that exciting soccer that they've been promising all season.
RFC now has 9 points on a 1-6-2 record. Draw Kings it is, I guess. That puts us in 9th. Now, actually 10th place, because there's a midweek game on, what, Tuesday? So North Carolina beat Loudoun, so they jumped us up.
Furthermore on that, so we're currently tied with 9 points against our less than best to the West, as Hartford now sits on 5 losses on the season. I'm not saying that to make a comparison, but I know early on it was like they were at the top of the table and we were kind of hovering towards the bottom of that basement. It's interesting to see now what 5 losses brings a squad like Hartford down, whereas with those 6 draws, we've kind of remained very constant and neutral. But again, we've only lost 2 games on the season. So it's really important now that we start to look for those wins, because a win can easily jump us to 8th, but then we're only within 1 point striking distance of jumping all the way to 5th. So the points are going to really start to matter as we hit these games, and we really need the 3 points now.
Yeah, time to drop the Draw Kings moniker and move on to the Win Kings.
We'll work on it. We'll work on that. Yeah.
Anyways, so Colorado Springs Switchbacks currently have 10 points from a 3-1-5 record so far this season. They have 5 losses already, but currently they're on a 3-game winning streak.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about this game. I think we've seen a lot of, I don't want to say mirror matches, but we've seen a lot of teams where it's like, hey, how are we going to beat this squad? And then I don't know that we've seen a lot of games where we've had the confidence that we can say like, okay, well, this is a team that, you know, is working in our favor to have a victory kind of be grasped and reached out for. So this is going to be a lot of fun to unpack. Let's get into these injuries before we talk about anything else. So we still have Amos Shapira-Thompson out. Good news is his brace has been removed. So he's now at a point where he's able to go through physical therapy and his rehabilitation without that brace. So that's great progress to hear. Grant Stoneman still out. He, according to the timeline, the coach said he put him at 3 to 4 weeks. So if we go to the major side of that, he's still about 3 weeks out from returning to the squad. Have not gotten the injury report as to why he's been out for almost 7 weeks, but waiting for that. And then Connor McGlynn, probably still a week out based on what Connor said during the press conference last week. He was in full training ahead of the match, but my guess is if he's still a week out, he probably didn't travel to Colorado. So I would say we'll probably anticipate seeing him in some version on the May 25th game. Formation-wise, I think you don't touch it. I think you leave exactly as you see it. It's another 3-5-2 with all of the same players, including Prince Sadie. I don't think you can take a player like Sadie out after that game without completely destroying his nerves and his confidence. But I did want to ask you a question. Do you think, regardless of the sit or miss, do you think that this is something where Quisera should be the starter? You had said a second ago that you'd like seeing Quisera kind of come in from the bench and being a little bit hungrier than maybe the performances we've seen on the season so far. Is that the move, or do you think Quisera offers more opportunity? Like, what's the better player between the two of them?
It's hard to say right now. I would be leaning towards Sadie, though. So I would personally give him the start still, and then kind of maybe 60th minute, depending on how the game's gone, bring Quisera in and see what he can see what he can change it up.
So then the next question, is it too soon to start JJ Williams?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think we see him. What, we got him 10 minutes?
10
maybe
to 15.
Maybe 15 with extra time. I'd say maybe 20 to 30 we'll probably get. You don't want to, you know, re-aggravate something after that long of a injury.
I think that makes sense. I'm sure JJ would say that he should be starting the game, because every time we've talked to him, he's been ready. He's been ready for 6 weeks. So
I imagine athletes like that, you know, they're just sitting there bored. They want to get back out there. So I can't blame him.
So the real question then, if everyone's healthy, with maybe the exception of Amos, what do you do about Connor McGlynn? Because now that we have Jack P, we have JJ, I'm starting to struggle to find how you make a starting 11 with the talent that you have. This can be a conversation for when Connor actually is available for selection, but it needs to be acknowledged, because in my mind, at this point, he'd be competing for one of those three central spots between Clay Holstead, Mark Ibarra, and Jack P. And I don't think there's an argument that any of those three should be removed from the pitch either. He's not an out wide player. So if one of them has to sit between the four, who are you sitting?
Interesting question. I think when everyone's healthy, I imagine coach will rotate more, and he'll, to a certain extent, play the hot hand. So whoever is having better games will get better minutes and kind of go from there. We've seen some adaptability from the squad. They can line up in various formations between three back lines and four back lines. So I wouldn't be surprised if coach threw some more nonsense our way, so to say. And, you know, just like four midfielders out there, you know, and some wide players. I mean, we've seen, I know Doyle is listed as a forward, but he kind of feels more like a winger. And we've played with like Doyle and Sadie up front, right?
Oh, I'm not worried about Doyle and Sadie.
So no, I know, but I mean, we've seen him do some interesting things with some of our lineups.
So Connor McGlynn's going to be a striker?
I wouldn't say a striker, but, you know, I don't know. Maybe he stretches the field and we see 3-4-3 or something. But you just have like...
You still have the same problem. Do you see the point? No matter what, you have a center of the midfield talent problem. I mean, you could move Holstead to the far right, but then you lose potentially Turnbull, or you lose one of the striker or wingers up front. The way I kind of see this long term is that it's a four back line. I think you almost have to move to a four. Again, you can do what you were describing about the 3-5-2 into the 4-2-3-1. I think that makes a lot of sense.
4-4-2's back on the menu, baby.
Or 4-4-2, but like you have too much talent now to decide between Fuson, Chico, and JJ when they're all healthy. Like that's your starting three. Like I don't think that's negotiable unless someone is having a really bad run of form. So you have 3 to 4 roster spots in the midfield, and I'm thinking you have 3 because it would be like, again, a 4-3-3. That's right now Jack P, Clay Holstead, and Marky Barr. Like it's going to be a problem. It'll be really interesting to see how this goes. Mark Ibarra is often overlooked, but he's the silent unsung hero that allows flashier players like Clay Holstead and Jack P to do their thing. So it's going to be a interesting season ahead, in my opinion.
Yeah, I expect a lot of rotation.
Yeah, and hey, listen, if that's what it gets to get people competitive and hungry for minutes and we get more goals, then, you know, as fans, we are the winners out of that situation. So let's get into this Colorado formation now. You're thinking this is a 4-2-3-1 or maybe a 5-4-1. Walk us through what you think will be on the pitch on Friday.
So I think we'll see Christian Herrera in net, and then a back line of Koa Santos, Matthew Mahoney, Duke Lacroix, Matthew Real. Your holding midfielders, Devin Williams and Aiden Roca. You got your like attacking mids and wingers of Malik Foster, Zachary Zandi, and Yosuke Hanya, with Ronaldo de Moose up top. We've seen a bit of rotation on some of these attacking midfielders, so, you know, I'm just kind of guessing.
I mean, that's predictions guaranteed to be wrong, right?
Yeah.
Always. We may get the first Rhode Island FC prediction right, though, but who knows about the Colorado one. I think we were a little off with the substitutions on last week, so I never really put too much stock into it. So I think you're spot on. I can tell you, though, that this team, you know, they may be on a 3-game win streak, but this team is coming off of beating opponents that every team in the league should be beating right now. They beat the derailed El Paso, who only just recently won their first game of the season. They pasted the manager-sacked Roots a couple of games ago, and then they whooped on Hartford last week, which every team should be whooping on, and it shows in their scores. What's interesting, too, is that of the last two wins that they've had, their scoreline was actually augmented by penalties. And while it takes a, you know, tactic, it takes a buildup of play to earn a penalty, they're not exactly producing these goals in the run of play. Obviously, we have no right to talk about penalty conversion because we haven't had that on the season very well for us. But this isn't a team that's generating a lot of natural buildup and offense from that. And then in addition to that, you have to kind of keep in mind, too, the fact that the Switchbacks just lost to MLS Next Pro side NYCFC2. Again, we have to be a little humble. We didn't beat a team that was, you know, quote unquote, lower than us as well in the Open Cup. But I'm not convinced with that loss that they're as far along the path to being a complete team or a more well put together and finished product than where maybe RIFC is at this point. The Switchbacks are a team that is most comfortable right now scoring their goals from crosses into the box. That seems to be their MO. So much like what we were trying to do over the last previous games, they love to run down those flanks and try to find Demoose inside the box. They have only generated one goal in the run of play that was built up that was central. So I think for Rhode Island, you know, they just need to be cognizant of that kind of wing play for the game, maybe more defensive than offensive in that space. But what was also really interesting to me is that Switchbacks seem to be a team that likes to be very lethal for the first 20 minutes and the last 20 minutes of the match. I watched 3 of their games on speed 2 just to kind of like get the feel of what their game was. And they start strong, both in the intensity and goal production, and then they kind of just fall off. They're just kind of playing balls into spaces where they think they can go, just kind of zonal in their approach. not really doing anything of importance, and then they kind of turn on again with the, you know, 20 minutes or so to go. That'll be interesting because, one, Rhode Island FC has most of their best performances in the first 45, and we have seen, based on some of the recent performances in this 90-minute goals against, that there may be some leakage that RIFC needs to make sure doesn't get caught unprepared for. But this team doesn't really lead in any category other than red card accumulation and goals conceded. I think they do have a chance creation. They have a player that's been performing pretty well in that category. But overall, like, this isn't a team that, you know, people are being worried about. And I'm just, that makes me worried that Rhode Island will play down to that level.
Yeah, that's definitely a concern for the team. This is a team we should be beating. But if we are playing to their level, I mean, that could cause some problems. Do you think the altitude will be an issue here? Colorado is, what, mile above sea level?
I love this question. I actually studied altitude acclimatization a lot in sports for just being a weird hobby. So I know a little bit about it, and it's really interesting. There's kind of two schools of thought about how you acclimate to altitude. There's the school of thought of, one, you get in and out before the altitude actually catches you. So there's a reason that it takes a little bit of time to get settled in. You can actually beat that time if you can kind of show up, do your thing, and get out before it catches you. It's not a perfect science, but that also only really helps for teams that are closer to Colorado, to where they can kind of fly in. And we're talking, like, you know, if the game's at, I don't know, it's what, 6 o'clock on Friday night for them, that's a team that would be able to fly in at 11 in the morning, land, be on site by 1, play the game at 4, and then be flying home so that they can just get right back to their normal altitude. When you're coming from across the country, that doesn't really make it that possible. So Rhode Island probably can't do that. We know that they only left today to travel to Colorado Springs. So you kind of have to go into that second camp, which is, you really need 1 to 3 days to acclimate. Obviously, the better that you are in shape and with physical therapy and the disciplines, especially around hydration. Hydration is such an important part of getting acclimated. You can speed that up into the 24-hour period. So they're going to have been there for enough time to be ready for the game tomorrow. But it's really also hard to, like, say, hey, like, the best result is be there for 3 days to be fully integrated, at least in that first 72-hour period. But then you're away from your family for 3 whole days. And then that's the wrong kind of edge to give a player who is probably missing their family or missing their loved ones. So there's enough time for this team to get in there for 24 hours and get back out. I don't think this is going to be a problem. I looked at the track record. A lot of teams have beaten the Switchbacks in their home this season. It's not impossible to do.
Yeah, they don't actually have a great home record. I think they're better away right now.
Right. So, like, this isn't something where other teams haven't done the same thing and figured it out. So I'm not worried about it. I don't think anyone that's paying attention should be worried about it. I think if you were showing up day of, but it was like, it was greater than 12 hours, so that would be probably a concern that these players would maybe get caught a little winded. But I think this will also go down to coach and how he manages his player management. If there are people that are getting a little, you know, short-winded, then it's going to be a situation where you may see some earlier subs than normal for the players that are going to be putting in the most mileage on the day.
Good thing we have a midfield problem with too many players, right?
Well, I mean, we don't have a complete midfield problem yet because I don't think Connor traveled, but you're right. It's still...
To an extent.
Yes. We definitely have additional midfielders that we can finally substitute of quality, so... Absolutely. Hey, so let's get into these players that we think are going to make an impact on the game for the Switchbacks.
All right. So we got Malik Foster here, a Jamaican right winger who's well-traveled. He's played between a few different leagues and teams throughout his years. Been flexible, too, where he can play. Left wing, right wing, cam, even forward at times. So far, he's tallied 4 assists. So I think we just have to be worried if he can get in behind our back line and cause some issues. He has some strength and speed that we got to be worried about.
Yeah. And again, like we said, like the game plan, unless the Switchbacks are going to change it, they're going to switch their plan, is that wing crossing threat. So it's the Malik to Demoose connection that we have to be worried about, which is the player I would bring up in Ronaldo Demoose. Those of you familiar with the San Diego Loyal from last year know of his exploits. He's a proven goal scorer in the league with 11 goals last season in regular play. And then a hat trick during the playoffs in what would be the Loyal's final game ever played. He's had a bit of a slow start this year with only 4 goals, with 2 of them coming in penalty conversion, but we all know from his time in the USL that he can be a threat. This guy was on the short list to be picked up by RIFC. I think we just couldn't put together a complete deal for him, or we knew that we probably had Chico in the wings, so we went with Chico instead, which I'm happy that we did. But this is not someone to be trifled with. He can be a killer in his own right. I'm kind of curious, though, with Koke having played so much and practiced with him and being very familiar with his skills, does that hurt or help us?
I think it can help us if he remembers his time in practice, like where he likes to shoot the ball. It might give him a better opportunity to give him a leg up in terms of trying to save the ball. And last, we got here Aiden Rocha, a defensive midfielder out of Georgetown, selected by DC United in the Super Draft, but ultimately didn't sign with them, played with Loudon, and is now in the Switchbacks. Could be a bit of a coincidence, but since he's been playing a bigger role in the team, because he didn't start many of the first games or even get any minutes, they now have 3 wins and 1 draw, and he is one of their higher rated players on FOTMOP. Kind of like a Nick Ross, you know, the defensive midfielder who puts in a lot of work, who kind of goes unnoticed, keeps the team solid.
Is Jack P our highest rated player now on FOTMOP because he only has 1 game and he's at like an 8.3?
I think so.
Nice. Nice. So we can call it the Jack P effect. Love it. What does Rhode Island FC have to get right in this game to pull off the W?
So we've mentioned multiple times tonight, we don't need to play to the opponent's level. Take that performance that we had this last weekend and continue to play at that level. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. The team played well, and let's just continue to see more of that. And I really do hope we see the same lineup again.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we got to punch this shark right in the nose. Go up by 2 at the halftime and then just lock it down. The Switchbacks seem to be a team that either does all the scoring on a game or gets scored on the entire game. Lots of nils on one side or the other of the match. If they forget their shooting boots, it's going to show. But again, this is a team that's starting to trend in the right direction, maybe playing lesser opponents, but they've got momentum on their side. I'm hesitant to reinforce that this team has a 90th minute management issue. Like I said, I think Coach definitely has emphasized the need to get more focused on after scoring a goal to prevent that equalization. But I think it's kind of continuing that course and focusing on keeping out a quick avenging goal against that this team is going to be just fine on the night as long as they finish their chances. We have to finish our chances. So much so that before the match against Sacramento, I was having a conversation with Tommy Quinlan. We were talking about shots on target and shots in total, and he gave me some interesting information on his perspective around on how our shots have been specifically at home, but I took it against the entire season so far. And Jason, I'm going to ask you a question. Sacramento was the second game of the season where we outshot on target our opponent. Can you guess the other game?
Charleston Battery?
New Mexico United.
Oh, interesting.
We have not had more shots on target in any other competition all season, with the exception of, and New Mexico's, it wasn't even close. It was like 9-2. But every other game, whether it was a draw, a loss, or our win, we have underperformed on shots on target compared to our opponent.
No, that makes sense. Earlier on when we were talking about like the quality of this performance, I mentioned that the New Mexico game was a good performance. It's just been so long ago.
It's been 84 years. So we checked our score predictions. Right now, 63% of people believe that Rhode Island FC will get the W here in Colorado Springs, with 23% in favor of the Switchbacks, and then 13% thinking Draw Kings will continue. So, I mean, I almost want to say Draw Kings so it doesn't happen, so I can just get that done, but...
good strategy.
What we both predicted a tie last week, the exact same scoreline. You're technically up in the rankings right now. What do you got for score predictions?
I'm going to go with 2-1. As much as I want the clean sheet, we're away. You know, maybe DeMoose will get one, just to be like, hey, you should have got me kind of thing. But I think we'll beat this team.
I'm going clean sheet. I'm saying this is going to be the first complete game with a clean sheet, 2-0 us. And because it's, again, every, for whatever reason, there's only one game on the season that both teams have scored. So it's not going to be this one. And I think we're going to walk away with a win and a clean sheet on the night. So let's get into these questions, huh?
Mark here wants to know, why can't this team get the dubs at home?
I mean, listen, it's either the kid is cursed, the turf is cursed, the time is cursed. I don't know. I don't even want to say it's a curse, but like it is very interesting that we have not been able to get that win. I hope that that is coming, and it's just a product that we played the best team in the West. Unfortunately, our next home team, guess what we're playing? Our next home game, I should say, we're playing the best team in the East Coast right now with Lou City. So maybe that win is a couple more games out. I don't know. We'll figure that out on next week's episode. Evan writes in, I do have a question. If JP is our CAM moving forward, who are the CMs that you think would be the ones to complement Jack? So I guess this is more of the conversation around what we were saying a second ago.
Right now, I think it'll be Ibarra and Holstead. We'll see when McGlynn gets healthy. I think that realistically, though, it'll be who is the hot hand, so to say, who's playing better. And then Ryan here wants to know, will you be taking a sort of legal action if you were not the winner of the Luchador? I assume you would have bragged, so you probably didn't get it, did you?
No. In fact, the person who just asked the question a second ago is the winner of the Luchador card. So, I would love to take legal action if there's any lawyers out there that can help me with my case. I don't feel like I can afford a lawyer for it. So I'm just going to make an open threat to Evan and tell him that I'm going to ban him from all of our social platforms if he doesn't either give me the card or make a trade of some sort. I'm more than accommodating. We can talk business as long as you're not trying to fleece me, and we'll see what's there. I will say, though, I made a terrible mistake. I could have probably beaten him on my bid, but the card collecting app made an upgrade or a change in the way you can turn in basic cards. At the beginning of the campaign, you could just turn those in and get more packs. So I was just gambling those away left and right. When they upgraded the limited cards, it did require caps. And I read that like, oh, you have to spend your caps to do that. I wasn't paying attention that they had also made a rule for the basics. I blew like 110 caps.
Oh,
just upgrading basic cards for more basic cards. So I was very upset with myself for not commanding the English language and reading the rules of that. But I went to go make my final bid and I was missing a bunch of caps. I was like, what? Like I literally complained to the creator, was like, hey, your app is breaking. Someone has stolen my caps. And he's like, no, you spent your caps like a smart guy. So that was on me. I mean, technically, I lost the Luchador card, but Evan, I will ban you from everything. So the decision is yours. You have 24 hours. Shadow Wolf writes in, do you know if there's an option to buy Jack P after the season, or will you just improve him to make him more interesting for the Revs?
I don't know the particulars of Jack P's contract. It will depend upon his performance.
We can't afford him. Simple as that.
Yeah. With how good he looked on the first game, realistically, you know, we get the best out of him that we can from the season. And then we look to the future and try and find someone of similar quality, or depending on how the team pans out, you know, look for something different if this is not the direction that coach wants to continue in. Mike here wants to know, midfield went from a position of need to a position of strength in just a couple of weeks. Once everyone is healthy, how can the club get the most out of the players there? Is it a rotation, play the best, or will the opponent dictate the playing time?
So you kind of have said it's going to be you play the hot hand, which I don't think you're wrong about. I think it's going to be, I think coach will eventually start to see this as playing the squads that make the most sense against the lineups he's up against. I think right now he's been trying to figure out what the best squad he could play out of those that were healthy and available. But I think once time comes in, I think it will be more of a either rotation or knowing that you've got a team that is just as aggressive as you in their attempts to have a high press. And maybe you change a little bit of that and play a player that maybe we wouldn't think is necessarily a starter all the time. I think there's an argument for players like Smith and Messer and Anking to get starting minutes. Joe Brito is going to have to figure out how to get starting minutes at some point now in this as well. So I think there's definitely an option. I don't know, though, if that's down to the formation or like, hey, it's NCFC and they're in last place. You know, for the last game of the season, it's Miami and they're in the basement. Do we put in the quote unquote B squad? I don't know that yet. Right now, I do know that coach needs to get more wins before he can have that discussion. So I think it's play the best until you're in a place where there's enough protection to get you either a playoff berth for sure, or maybe even like a guaranteed home playoff berth. But that's all going to come down to, can our players stay healthy too? Because not all of these players were injured at the beginning of the season. We've had some injuries that have happened as we've moved through our games. So we're 10 games in, and I think 65% of our players have had at least a one single game delay of injury, sickness, or discipline. So I think that problem will kind of sort itself out through the nature of the sport. Tim writes in, now that Jason has spent a game in Section 13 and advanced several levels above Matt in the secret Defiance 1636 ranking system, do you intend to watch more games from the supporter section going forward? Before you answer that, I'm sorry, there's a secret Defiance 1636 ranking system?
Yeah, you don't know about the secret ranking system?
I did not. Now I do. This cat's out of the bag. Go ahead, Jason, answer this question.
I had a blast, and I think a few times throughout the year, I just want to be a fan. So, like, you know, I think we have a friend coming to visit us. Maybe when he's out here, we'll just go hang out and party with you guys. But it's not something I'll be doing every week. So just maybe a few times a season.
You must have left quite the impression, because Taras then asks, are you guys going to watch the Hartford match in the stands with the fans, or be media and watch from the press box? I don't, we're going to try to get press requests, but we did buy tickets as a precaution. It's really interesting when you're not asking for season credentials, you have to ask like the week before, and it's a reset every week to see if you can get them. I don't think Hartford would, you know, as much as we've made fun or poked the bear, so to speak, like, I don't think that there's anything that they would say, no, you guys can't come in. But that being said, they're definitely being very, very cagey and very different with how they're treating Rhode Island versus any other club that's asked for things in the past. So I think that could be a difference maker there.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going to happen there. Basically, it's going to kind of come down to Hartford's decision.
Right. You know, well, I mean, with the alcohol tailgate party, I kind of just want to enjoy that as a fan experience myself. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens. No, we're not sure. I don't think I would want to sit in the press box. I don't even think they'd have room for us, to be honest. I've been to that stadium. It's not very big. So, and then last question of the night, FQB. Jason, do you think trunk wine has a positive effect on watching soccer or a negative?
It's all in moderation.
So, hey, listen, Friday, May 17th at 9 p.m., RIFC will be playing away to the Colorado Springs Switchbacks. It's going to be a late game, but join the Defiant 1636 of the Guild in Pawtucket or the official RIFC watch party, which will be at the Troop in Providence. Or you can watch this one on CBS Sports Galazzo Network. This will be the first one. So if you're going to watch the game from home, make sure you've figured out how to get to that. There's been a lot of complaints online that people have struggled to figure out where exactly this app is. It is not a Paramount Plus subscription required app. It is a free service. So do your homework and don't wait till the very last second to try to figure out how to get into that.
I have Paramount Plus, and I had a hard time putting on the game the other day that was on there. I don't know why they make it so hard. So maybe give yourself a few extra minutes to kind of figure out where it's at. On Saturday, May 25th, it's RIFC's Military Appreciation Day, featuring special programming to honor active duty military members, veterans, and their families. There are also special donation programs to get service members and vets out to the game. We'll most likely be donating our extra tickets. If you know someone, let us know. If this is something that you like to participate and support, check your emails.
And then with Defiant 1636 going in person to Hartford, I imagine that the Guild is probably not going to be a thing for the June 1st game, but the club has confirmed that there will be an official away watch party at Moniker Brewing, so look for more info coming that way soon. Super excited to have Defiance back on the podcast. It's been almost a year since we've had them officially on, so that's going to be exciting. We've got a bunch of other guests in store in the future that should get people pretty excited to keep plugging in and listening to us. As always, we just really appreciate your patronage and your support.
Thank you guys for all your support. We really appreciate it. So let's wrap this up and get out of here. You can find us on Twitter, Threads, and TikTok at RIFC Podcast. Instagram at Raising Anchor, and there's that website, www.raisinganchorpodcast.com.
Anchor's up, buddy.
Anchor's up.